The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Good morning. Welcome to the Navigating Your Life Show, featuring host Dr. Nathaniel J. Williams. In the next hour, the goal of the show is to help you with the challenges facing you and potentially change your life forever. Now here's Dr. Nathaniel J. Williams.
Well, good morning, and thank you so much for taking time out of your schedule and your busy day, I'm sure even on a Monday, to join us. We have a very, very interesting topic that we want to talk about today, and we're going to title today's show as Family by Any Other Name. And we have a guest with us today, Dr. Michael Rosen, who likes to be called just Michael, so we'll honor his request. But let me give you a little background on who Michael is. Michael grew up in the state of Vermont and was born in the 1960s. He went on and got his bachelor's and master's and an MBA and another master's and a PhD from the Business School Wharton, which is part of the University of Pennsylvania. After he graduated, he went on and taught at New York University as a professor. Then he went into the real estate industry and then went on to become an owner and CEO of a Wall Street firm that was severely affected by the events of September 11th, 2001. Before that event, he did publish another book that we're going to talk about as well, called Spinning Words, Turning Worlds. But after he left the business in September 11th, 2001, he went on to begin to write the book that we're going to talk about today, which is called What Else But Home, Seven Boys and an American Journey Between the Projects and the Penthouse. In addition, after September 11th, 2001, he became a community organizer in 2004 in the founding the East Village Community Coalition, which is working on landmarking and zoning and alternative transportation, retail store legislation, as well as just general neighborhood concerns. He's a student as well as a teacher, and having learned Mandarin, and is now trying to study Japanese as well. So he comes with a great amount of prestige and also life travels. But we want to talk with him today about his quest to reach out and to make a difference in the lives of seven young men. So without further ado, we have Michael Rosen with us. So welcome, Michael.
Thank you, thank you. Good morning. I love that you said trying to learn Japanese, because it's so deeply true.
Wow.
It's like trying, not getting too far, but trying awfully hard.
Well, I just struggle trying to learn English, so I do. You are my hero already if you're trying to learn a second or third language. So.
Well, thank you. We all struggle with languages.
Sure. Well, Michael, your story is very powerful, and why don't you share with our listeners what you decided to do, I think it says here back in 1998, but tell us a little bit about the story that made the basis for the wonderful book you've written.
Well, we live in the Lower East Side of Manhattan, which is a very economically, racially, language-diverse community. And we moved here in 1989 or so because we really wanted this type of diversity, creativity. And my wife and I are both white, and we adopted two sons. The first in 1990, and the second a couple few years later. His birthday actually was just 2 days ago. Well, it was on the 8th, and our second son. And in the summer of 1998, when our older son, Ripton, was 7, almost 8 years old, he walked us onto a blacktop baseball field in the park across the street from our house. and joined a pickup game. He was the only white kid in the game. And the short story is that when the game ended, or the day got too dark to play anymore, he invited his teammates home. 10 or a dozen kids came over, and all from public housing, as we eventually learned, or other types of supported housing. And over the years, 5 of those boys ended up moving in with us and also becoming our sons.
Wow.
Hence the 7 boys in the American Journey part of the title.
Wow. And what would make your home become their home? What was their life situations where an alternate place to live, such as with yourself and your wife and your 2 sons, was seen as something that would be needed? What was their situation that made that necessary?
These young guys, and in the beginning it was more than just them. In the beginning it was, as I said, 10 or a dozen kids coming. They were the boys who ended up moving in with us, and I'm pretty sure nearly all the others, maybe except one, were in homes without dads or without men. And so single mom homes. They had brothers and sisters where the father would have, you know, there might have been 2, 3, 4 different fathers. Their moms, or the lady who raised them, who might be a great aunt, are loving and work really hard, but just didn't have near the resources that my wife and I do. Hmm. And, you know, they were amazed that we had milk in the refrigerator at the end of the month, because in their homes, the assistance checks would run out by then. Hmm. You know, it was one of my sons, Kindu, calls it part of the struggle. You know, part of the struggle. That's the world they come from.
Wow. And you have, at the point that you opened your home to the other 5, you already had adopted the 2. How did they adjust to this transition of more children coming into your home?
Well, the book that I wrote is it's not a fairy tale. Someone said that you know, all of us are flawed, which is a nice compliment in the book, because it's real. So there were moments when our older son didn't necessarily want everyone around, but he's the one who actually invited them in to begin with. Mm. And I never used words for us that were family words, that were familiar words, until I took Ripton to a school interview. He was switching schools, and he finished with his interview, and the school administrator came out and asked to speak with me, and we went into her room, and she said, you know, Mr. Rosen, could you tell me something? And of course, I said yes, because I wanted my kid to get into school. And she said, well, on his application, it says that he has 1 brother, but he keeps talking about 6 brothers. What's that about? Mm. And I smiled. And that was the first time that I understood that the boys were talking about themselves as brothers. And that was a magical moment for me.
Wow. And you mentioned that you're living in an area in New York City which is rather integrated. But reality is, even when there's some integration, it's okay if you see that integration out on the street and you pass it in on the sidewalk. What was the community's response and your neighbor's response when that integration was going on inside of your own building?
Yeah, your question is so right. There's a man who read my book, who's chair of African American Studies at Fordham University here in the Bronx. His name is Mark Nason, and he said that, you know, when you read it, it just shows you how much that we can live right across the street from each other in our society and use the same space, often at different times of the day, or pass each other on the street, and our lives don't integrate. And our lives, by the way, hadn't integrated. Leslie and I, my wife and I, moved here for diversity, but our friends continued to be white middle-class people. Hmm. Until our child, because so much of this comes from the innocence of children, our child brought us onto that baseball field because he wanted to play baseball. You know, he didn't care who the people were. He wanted to play baseball. So in the beginning, people used to say that the kids were using us, you know, the other kids who were coming here. Hmm. And, you know, my parents, my in-laws, friends of ours. And, well, but of course they were. You know, they were kids, and we had video games, and they didn't. And we had food in the refrigerator, and they didn't. But we didn't care because that's the nature of reality. And over time, really, when we took a trip across America at one point, and once that happened, I think things changed in everybody's view.
What was that? What did that trip accomplish for you in changing the view?
You know, it's about midway through What Else But Home. And it was at a point where some of the kids had already moved in. And we were sitting around having a Saturday night dinner once. And I just had this moment where they were talking about the ghetto, which is what they call where they came from. And I was thinking, well, this is really a really limited map. And therefore, if we put everybody in a car and drive across America, it's going to explode that map, and they'll want to come back and recant in Kierkegaard. It didn't happen that way, but we took really a heck of a trip from New York down the eastern seaboard to Miami Beach and Key West to New Orleans a year before Katrina, and then up through the Deep South, through Philadelphia, Mississippi, where the Freedom Summer Workers, three of them were murdered, and the Birmingham Civil Rights Museum. We met Reverend Shuttlesworth in Birmingham just by accident. And so little miracles happened to us along the way as well.
Wow. That must have been very, very powerful for them as an experience, because I know in the work that I do with children so often, you know, with the children that we serve that are here in Pennsylvania, sometimes they don't leave the city limits, not the state limits, but the city limits.
Yes.
And sometimes it's only one side, the east side or the west side of a city, and that begins their purview. And so when you get them in a car, for individuals who have just generally used public transportation or walked or bicycled, that's even a journey. And then when you begin to grow across those geographic boundaries, it's just a life-changing event for them just to see that everyone doesn't live in close proximity and that there is a lot of open land. So that, I'm sure those, as you know, those kind of moments stay with a person for years to come.
Even though they're complaining, no, we don't want anything educational. No, we can't do this, we can't do that. But you hope years later, right? Like any parent.
Sure. Sure.
With us, two of the young guys couldn't come. One, Carlos, was on an incredibly good baseball team, and another of our sons, Juan, had to work, so there were seven of us and a dog, and we did cut quite a picture.
Sure.
You know, what you were saying about not leaving the city or a neighborhood, you know, my guys would travel in pairs or in threes all around, but only together. And there were some neighborhoods right nearby, particularly white neighborhoods, that they didn't know, which really, like the Upper East Side or Soho, they had very little idea of. But Harlem, you know, Washington Heights, those ethnic neighborhoods they knew because that's where their friends were.
Wow.
So one of the guys, Carlos, I wanted him to go to a baseball camp, really to try to see, you know, to fulfill his dreams. And we were driving, and with my son Ripton, both of them were going. And Carlos said, like, oh, my God, a cow. You know, it was the first time he had ever been in some sort of pastoral place and had literally seen a cow.
Wow. And it reminds me, we're going to get ready to take a break, but it reminds me of, we have in this part of Pennsylvania, not a lot, but some black bear, and we sent a young guy outside to take out the garbage, and so we have a dumpster that's about 7 feet high, and he's looking through these doors on the side that slide, and a lot of times they leave them open, and they're supposed to close them so that the bear doesn't get in. So he's looking through one door, through the other door, and the bear is looking at him. at the same time that he's trying to dump some garbage in there. And again, for him, that changed his life because he just never, ever thought he would see a bear and not within 6 feet of him. So reality, those moments where they can just see the beauty of what life has to offer beyond those limits, and I think that's a challenge for everybody. So whether or not you have traveled around the United States, but going to another country and seeing and looking at examining another continent as well, I think that that's homework for all of us just to see the great disparity in which several people across this world have to live with. I think it gives us an appreciation for what we have that we wouldn't have had otherwise. And
yes,
again, for
does.
These youngsters, I'm sure you would agree that it just lets them know that the possibilities are truly endless, and that, you know, sometimes when you look at your situation, you hear another person's story, and you just, you know, it just changes your perspective. And if you didn't have that experience, it would be really difficult to try to explain to a person that perspective. So we're going to get ready to take a break in about 30 seconds, and I just want to highlight for our listeners that we have Michael Rosen, the author of What Else But Home, Seven Boys and an American Journey Between the Projects and the Penthouse. And when we come back, we're going to be talking with Michael about religion and how that was able to be factored in, because there's all these different cultures as well. But we'll just continue to have a conversation with Michael about how he has made this journey with the bumps and bruises, but also the smiles and laughter that has gone along with it as well. So we'll finish this when we get back.
The Internet's number one talk station.
Number one talk station.
VoiceAmerica.com.
Hyperbike Performance Centers, the extreme motorcycle tuning facility for performance-minded riders. For the most advanced tuning possible, bring your bike in for a diagnostic in their climate-controlled dyno room. Take advantage of their suspension services designed to tweak your bike's suspension till it fits your personal riding needs. All of their performance products are tested in their facility first. Brakes, wheels, alarms, GPS, and more. Hyperbike Performance Centers on Route 40 West, Frederick, or visit hyperbikeperformancecenters.com.
Wielding power, shaping environments and outcomes, and making things happen are all essential characteristics of great leaders. Yet these qualities alone are not enough to ensure your success. In a complex world, how do you decide what's most important to you? In your career, your relationships, your finances, your family, in the world around you, in the whole of your life at large? Dr. Joseph Riggio, the host of Leadership Intuition, says that personal leadership, the desire to take charge of your life, is the key to creating futures that work and building a life worth living. Join Joseph as he reveals the power of uncovering and living your own personal mythology, the key to personal transformation, exquisite performance, and social influence. Learn to look inside and discover your personal mythology and unique leadership style. Go beyond conventional advice and discover your unique success blueprint on Leadership Intuitions with Dr. Joseph Riggio each Friday at 8 a.m. Pacific, 11 a.m. Eastern on the Voice America channel. Leadership Intuitions, power, achievement, relationships.
Hey, Dad.
What?
I can't get the ketchup bottle open.
Here, let me try. Here you go.
Thanks.
You don't have to be a hero to be a hero. When you adopt a child from foster care, just being there makes all the difference. To learn more, call 1-888-200-4005. A public service announcement brought to you by Adopt U.S. Kids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
Ask the experts. Call toll-free right now, 1-866-472-5787.
Hello?
And ask our all-star team to answer your question. That's 1-866-472-5787.
Thank you for calling.
VoiceAmerica.com.
Tuned in to the Navigating Your Life Show with Dr. Nathaniel J. Williams. To participate in our discussion, please call 1-866-472-5788. That's 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to host@navigatingyourlifeshow.net. Now, back to the program.
Well, thank you for joining us back again. We're on today's show. We have with us Michael Rosen, who is the author of a wonderful book titled What Else But Home, Seven Boys in an American Journey Between the Projects and the Penthouse. And it talks about Michael and his wife's journey to include seven young men in their lives and to embrace them with open hearts and minds. And these individuals, these youngsters, come from a rather diverse background, but generally all of them have come from families that have had some financial challenges. And during the break, we were just trying to catch up on the ages of the young men. And Michael had said that the youngest, Morgan, is 17. And what is the eldest?
Our son, Kindu, who just turned 25, also
wow.
Just a couple of weeks ago.
Wow. One of the things that we were also having a chance to chat and want to bring our listeners in on this conversation is that this has been a partnership between yourself and your wife to take this on, and I think it has, been a greater responsibility on yourself, as someone has to go out and make some money to help pay for the expenses of life. But talk to us about the partnership as a husband and wife, and supporting these seven young men at different stages of their life. Some in high school, some in college, some. Taking on other responsibilities. And
sure.
How has that worked, please?
Sure. Well, both of us worked. I did until September 11th, and my wife is a physician, a gynecologist, which is kind of cute because she works in an all-women's medical practice, and she comes home, and it's all male. Even our little dog is male. And I think the best part for us, in a sense, is, I'm wonderful sometimes at ideas. Sometimes I'm terrible at ideas, but I'm always terrible at managing things. And Leslie's fantastic at managing things. So there were times when one of our sons, Felipe, we finally understood he just wasn't going to graduate high school. And I spent a week running up to the school through the embattlement of the police and the X-ray machines and all the things that one has to do to get through, talking to the three guidance counselors for 3,000 kids, and we finally got Phil into a good co-op program where he had to do these packets. And Leslie sat with him every night at the dining room table for months and months doing the packets.
Wow.
I couldn't do that at all.
Wow.
But she has that type of perseverance. So we work well together that way.
That's wonderful. And I think it's so important for our listeners to understand is maybe you're a person that does want to reach out to youngsters and make a difference in their life, and maybe you're not with a significant other, but I think having someone or having some people that have your back and that can augment your strengths and fill in for some of the areas that you're challenged in. I think, Michael, you would agree that whoever you are and whatever stage of life that you're in, that if you can find some time in your schedule to help out a person in need, that you do that and don't let the way in which your life is designed be a barrier to that. You just have to understand that there'll have to be some of those holes will have to be filled in. Which you
absolutely, that's people have looked at me. I've been since August, since my book came out. I've been going around the country to various bookstores and book fairs, and there are times where people have looked at me and said, oh my, how wonderful you guys are," which we're not. We're absolutely not, because everything that happened to us was just by accident, mm-hmm. and I always say what we did is just an extreme example, but spending a couple hours at a Boys and Girls Club, coaching a softball team or a baseball team, any of these things can make a life-defining difference in some young person's life and change their life forever.
Wow. And, Michael, you mentioned September 11th, and that seemed to put your career and your life on a different pattern. I don't want to spend too much time on that, but was that a good thing or a bad thing for you that got you to be more defined in what you wanted to do and clarified your purpose, or what role did that have
in it? Sure. Obviously, the tragedy was horrific, and my business was a block and a half south of the trade towers, and the second plane flew right by us. I was at work and looking out the windows, and it destroyed my business and years of effort and a tremendous amount of our resources. But no one in my company died. It put my company out of business, but no one died. And I did watch the towers fall and realize that life is short, which we all say, but watching it really touched me. And I woke up one day. Actually, I was standing in a hotel with our family. We had gone away and just had this epiphany that I wanted to write. And it was important for me to write about community.
Wow. One other thing that you mentioned in the book, that you're of a Jewish a practice when it comes to religion, and listening to some of the other names that you've mentioned, and Carlos and others, and Morgan, it would get me to believe, I may be wrong, that there's some diversity in religion and religious
yes,
practice.
Yes, there is.
We have about 3 minutes to our break, but how has that all worked in bringing all of those things together?
There are dialogues that I overheard among the kids that I write about in the book, where especially when kids were first coming over and they didn't know us as well, and our sons were going to a Jewish school on the Upper West Side, and Carlos would ask a question like, what are Jews, Ra? You're white, but you're not white? What is that? And my kids would answer, and then one of the kids would say, well, but do you believe in God? Do Jews believe in God? And then my kids would answer, and then William, who's a very sweet young man and very close to Ripton, and at that point had a slightly different theology, would say, well, you can't believe in God because you don't believe in Jesus. Mm-hmm. And then the other kids would try to quiet it down, and then, you know, there were times later in the book where when the Mel Gibson film came out and they went to see it, the Passion of Christ,
right,
and William would come back and say, well, you know, I love you guys, but you killed Jesus. And I'm thinking, well, I'm not 2,000 years old. And, you know, I love you guys, and it's too bad you can't go to heaven. So we've lived through all those sorts of things.
Wow. But I think it's important, if I got from your book, is that as you wanted them to come into your home, you accepted them as they are. You didn't look to strip them of their mother,
or
of their father, or of their religion, or of their culture. You said, come as you are, and whatever we can do, and whatever we can provide, whether it's that milk at the end of the month, that video game, that love, that support, let us provide that, but you don't have to strip yourself of who you are.
Absolutely. There were times, I grew up in Vermont, which is true, and I grew up in a Jewish home, and we didn't have Christmas trees. And some of the people in our communities, there weren't that many Jewish families, but, you know, people don't like to be outsiders. So some of the Jewish families had Christmas trees. We never did. I have always been madly in love with Christmas lights. And I love to go by the trees in New York and just look. But I've never had a tree. And some of my sons, five of them, are Christian, and they had moved into our house. And it's an interesting thing about religion. You know, most of us, you know, we understand that there's an underlying basis, that we're all similar. But there is also another underlying basis, that we're all right, but I'm just a little bit more right. Mm. But when you love your children and that's their holiday and they're yours, that I'm a little bit more right stuff really starts to fade. And so there's a time when I went out and bought Christmas lights and stockings and hung them up. I couldn't quite go get a Christmas tree, but I have a ficus, and I threaded everything through the ficus.
That's wonderful. We're going to take a break now, and when we come back, we're going to finish our continue our conversation with Michael Rosen, the author of What Else But Home, Seven Boys in an American Journey Between Their Projects and the Penthouse. So please stay with us. We'll be right back.
Streaming live, the leader in Internet talk radio, VoiceAmerica.com.
What's it like?
What's it like?
It's lonely.
It's really lonely.
I miss my brother.
I miss my brother.
I'm surrounded by other people, but it's not the same.
I've got other people around me, but it's not the same.
It's pretty scary, but I don't let it rattle me.
It's pretty scary around here, but I don't let it rattle me.
You always have to watch your back.
There's no one to watch my back.
I spend my whole day worried who's out to get me.
I'm always wondering who's out to get me.
But I can take care of myself.
But I can take care of myself.
No matter what, I'll keep my head up.
No matter what, I'll keep my head up.
It's not like I have a choice.
It's not like I have a choice.
This'll all be over in 5 years, 3 months, and 17 days.
This'll all be over in 5 years, 3 months, and 17 days.
Go to jail for a gun crime and your family serves a sentence with you. Something to think about before committing a gun crime. Gun crimes hit home. This message brought to you by Project Safe Neighborhoods and the Ad Council.
Hyperbike Performance Centers, the extreme motorcycle tuning facility for performance-minded riders. For the most advanced tuning possible, bring your bike in for a diagnostic in their climate-controlled dyno room. Take advantage of their suspension services designed to tweak your bike's suspension till it fits your personal riding needs. All of their performance products are tested in their facility first. Brakes, wheels, alarms, GPS, and more. Hyperbike Performance Centers on Route 40 West, Frederick, or visit hyperbikeperformancecenters.com.
Is there truly a lesson in every situation? Can you learn from another person's experiences, or are lessons learned when they only happen to you? Dave Felzer, number one national and number one international best-selling author, challenges listeners to stand tall, to be accountable no matter what the setbacks, and to recommit to enhancing their lives as well as assisting others around them. Listen to the Dave Felzer Show every Friday at 10 a.m. Pacific on the Voice America Radio Network.
The Internet's number one talk station.
Number one talk station.
VoiceAmerica.com.
Tuned in to the Navigating Your Life Show with Dr. Nathaniel J. Williams. To participate in our discussion, please call 1-866-472-5788. That's 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to host@navigatingyourlifeshow.net. Now, back to the program.
Well, thank you for rejoining us. We are talking today with Michael Rosen, and he is the author of What Else But Home, Seven Boys in an American Journey Between the Projects and the Penthouse. And this is a story about a journey that Michael and his wife Leslie have been on to open their homes and their hearts to children and young men who aren't their own biological children but have become family by any other name. And so I wanted to read something from Michael's book that I think is so very powerful. And it's a poem that he has quoted by Robert Frost that was written in 1915, and I think he would agree that almost 100 years later still speaks to us. It's the poem starts by, "You needn't be afraid, he'll leave you this time. Home," he mocked gently. "Yes, what else but home? It all depends on what you mean by home. Of course, he's nothing to us anymore. Than was the hound that came a stranger to us out of the woods, worn upon the trail. Home is the place where you have to go there. They have to take you in. I should have called it something you somehow haven't to desire." And I think if Michael would say is that that is when it's all said and done, that what he wanted to create for himself and his wife and these seven young men was a home, that by any other name, they would refer to it as such. And we'll come back and read a little bit more. But one of the stories that I liked was later in the book called Getting Out. And it talked about Kendu, and I'll just read it. Kendu told us he was coming home for spring break. With Phil and Carlos in the house, it didn't feel right to leave them for a vacation. So Leslie, his wife, and he, Michael, spoke about driving near New York to Boston or Philadelphia, the Catskills. But friends invited us to their suburban tract mansion outside of Chicago, and we brought plane tickets for everyone except Juan, who couldn't leave his Toys R Us job. Kendu and Carlos had never been in a plane. And it's Carlos says, is the sun real big when you get up there? And Michael said, it's the same. But you're way up, Carlos said. It's like 100 million miles away. And you're a mile up, and the sun's still nine. And I guess Carlos says, I got the idea. And Ripken said, hold it. As he said this from the TV room, did Carlos just ask you if you're close to the sun? And it just the book is just full of stories such as that, where you just see the interchange, the learning, the love, the compassion, and you hear how teenagers can get on top of each other and give them a hard time as well. But I strongly encourage of those of you that haven't had a chance to read the book that you get on Amazon or Barnes & Noble or get down to the store and get a copy. It'll be just warming to your heart and your soul to know that people are caring in ways they don't have to because they've just chosen to do so. So
and
we have
to your local bookstore, too, if you can.
Say that again.
And to your local bookstore as well, if you can.
Sure, because you want to help create a demand that they, if they don't have it in stock, that they get it in stock because we have so much stuff in our lives that are just full of stuff that we can't use. And I think the information in these 300 or more pages here, the 350 or so pages, is stuff that we definitely can use. So without further ado, we have a caller on the phone, Wendy from Pennsylvania. So Wendy, what is your question or comment that you'd like to share?
Okay. It's just very intriguing and quite unique. And I hear how this arrangement has enriched Michael's life and the life of all his sons. But just out of curiosity, how do you go from hosting your children's friends to having them move in permanently? It just seems so amazing.
Well, it's thank you for the question. It happened slowly. You know, it happened over a course of 4 or 5 years, and we became more and more involved in these young men's lives, these boys' lives. And there came moments where we realized that things had happened to them, and we never wanted to do that look away that all of us know how to do. You're walking down the street and you see someone, maybe they're asking for a quarter, they're clearly homeless, maybe you don't have a quarter in your pocket, and you just do that look away. And we never wanted to do that with these boys. And my wife and I had spoken about that, and there came a moment in Carlos's life where the road really did have a fork, and we knew he had to move in, and we spoke with him about it. And that was the beginning of each of the five moving in with us.
Wow. And so often, I would think, Wendy, you recognize with kids, sometimes they're living at your house more than they're living at their own house anyway. So it just becomes a, do we want to bring the toothbrush or not? Sometimes just the way life goes. Anything else, Wendy, you'd like to share or ask?
Thank you so much. It's very interesting. Thank you.
Sure. Thank you, Wendy. And we have another caller, Stephanie from the great state of Missouri. So we're going to take Stephanie now. Stephanie, are you on the line?
I'm here.
Sure. Please share your question or comment.
Sure. My question was, what would have to be the greatest challenge that you had about bringing such a diversity of children into your home?
Well, that's a good question. Carlos, one of my guys, went off to play baseball in Missouri, so I've spent some good time there. The biggest issue for us, unquestionably, has been intellectual curiosity and just wanting to find ways to open these guys' minds so they wanted to read, they wanted to do things more than play video games. said, they really developed an ability for critical thinking, and there's just something about the way that they grew up that just, I want to think, closed it for them. And I wish that we had met these guys earlier and they had come into our lives earlier, but that has been the most frustrating thing for us. Because, you know, my book ends in January of 2005, but they're still our kids, and we're still involved with them day after day, and they're older now, and the problems become more serious as well.
Wow. Stephanie, anything else you'd like to add?
No, I appreciate it.
Well, thank you so much, Stephanie, for calling in.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that I think that you highlight so well just now, and as well as in the book, you start the book out, the first sentence in the first chapter of the introduction is, you start with the end in sight and you say, let me just find it, afterwards they went on to college.
So yes.
When I read that, I understand that this role of parenting was not about their teenage years, that as your children are now 17 and as old as 25, you're in this for the long haul, that once you have opened your home and you have taken on the role as surrogate mother and surrogate father, the job doesn't end when the degree is granted in college or in high school, that you have made these individuals a part of you, of the fabric of you and your wife for the rest of your life and theirs.
Yes, wow. Absolutely correct.
And one of the things that's so important that I think for listeners to understand is, especially when we are dealing with youngsters who have some parts of the family component that's missing, is that they're looking for that to be in the long haul. You know, they're 14, 15, 20 years. That's only a fraction of their life, and they're looking for connections that will last such a long period of time. And I work with one of the universities here, and one of the biggest challenges they have is when they have kids that come in from foster care, they don't have any place to go when the holidays.
Oh, yes.
And so they're like, what do we do? And so what they've had to do is to open up parts of their building, which to allow for those individuals to stay there, but they can't lots of times stay in the room that they normally are in for the semester because they have to consolidate so because the staffing is less. But we don't recognize the burden that sometimes happen for children once they age up and walk into life. And if I hear you clearly, is that you're prepared to embrace them. And I think I read in your book about, you know, pregnancies and other issues that these kids begin to walk into as they get
mm-hmm.
older.
Mm-hmm.
You're in there for the long haul.
It sure is the long haul. This weekend, I shouldn't say which, I guess, but one of the guys who doesn't live with us anymore is pretty sad and really depressed. And he's back in school, and he texted me, like, I think I'm going to drop out. And I said, no, you're not, and let's sit down. And I asked, when did this start, like this really awareness of being sad? And he said the most amazing thing. He reads. And I had given him books by Thich Nhat Hanh, the Vietnamese Zen Buddhist monk, who writes beautiful books. And my son kept saying, as he was reading Thich Nhat Hanh, he was aware of how sad he was. And I thought, oh my, like I've helped create this as well, and we need to find a way to address this. But you know, family is forever. I love that line of Robert Frost. Home is the place where, when you have to go there, they have to take you in.
Wow.
And that's a guiding light for us.
Wow. Well, we have 2 minutes before we go to our next break. But I think that your points that that love is somewhat unconditional. I think we live in a society where on the other side of something bad happening, we recognize, you know, when a person's life may have ended it through suicide or some other kinds of actions. We all want to go back and to look at it and see what we could have done. And if I hear you clearly, is that let's not wait for those moments. And you know, you check in with your child, even if they're 20, you know, 3 years old, and that you just understand that this parenting and this nurturing, especially since a lot of them didn't get it until very late, is something that we just got to understand we must do, and we can't fall off the radar screen or allow for them to do so. And it does bring a big burden at times, but I think the benefit long haul, I know that kind of care and compassion will never be forgotten in the long run. In the moment, it may be a challenge, but in the long run, they will sincerely appreciate that. So one of the things, we're going to get ready to take the break, but we have a television show, and we're working on putting that together. And one of the children that we're trying to highlight in one of the commercial breaks is a child available for adoption. And, you know, one child was, I think, 19 years old. And
right.
He's still looking for a family and a home. So it's something that we all have that quest for, and it's never too late to extend yourself. And I think you said early on correctly is that if it's just to go to the Boys and Girls Club, if it's just to, you know, read some books, or it's just to help with a scholarship, whatever you can do, if opening your home is not the thing you can do, there are lots of other options short of doing that that would have a profound impact on kids' lives.
Absolutely.
Okay. So we're going to get ready to take our break now, and we'll come back and continue our conversation with Michael Rosen, the author of What Else But Home, Seven Boys and an American Journey Between Their Projects and the Penthouse.
Stimulating talk
gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time. The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
And we're back. Bob from Scranton, you're on the air.
Hi, Ted. Love the show. Long-time listener. First-time caller.
Thanks, Bob. Is there a special someone out there you'd like to talk about?
There is, Ted. I recently lost a very big part of my life.
You'd been together a long time?
Since college. This is for my belly, my paunch, my spare tire. I know we had some good times. God knows I'll never forget that night in Albuquerque with the burritos.
It's never easy to lose something that's been such a huge part of you, Bob. Where'd the magic go?
Well, I'd recently begun taking the stairs more and more instead of the elevator, and then we started seeing less and less of each other. One day, it was just gone.
Small step number 67. Take the stairs instead of the elevator or escalator. It's just one of the many small steps you can take to help you become a healthier, well, you. Get started at www.smallstep.gov and take a small step to get healthy.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Hyperbike Performance Centers, the extreme motorcycle tuning facility for performance-minded riders. For the most advanced tuning possible, bring your bike in for a diagnostic in their climate-controlled dyno room. Take advantage of their suspension services designed to tweak your bike's suspension till it fits your personal riding needs. All of their performance products are tested in their facility first. Brakes, wheels, alarms, GPS, and more. Hyperbike Performance Centers on Route 40 West, Frederick, or visit hyperbikeperformancecenters.com.
Are you living with passion, purpose, and play? Are you ready to overcome your fears, claim your power and purpose to make your mark on the world, but don't know where to start? TuckSelf, the Rebel Bell, will inspire and empower you to squeeze as much juice and joy out of life as possible. You'll find your passion, live on purpose, and do it all with a boatload of play. Join this amazing voice for Tuck Talk every Monday at 6 p.m. in the East and 3 p.m. in the West on the Voice America Variety Channel. Live rebelliciously and on your terms.
The Internet's number one talk station.
Number one talk station.
VoiceAmerica.com.
Tuned in to the Navigating Your Life Show with Dr. Nathaniel J. Williams. To participate in our discussion, please call 1-866-472-5788. That's 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to host@navigatingyourlifeshow.net. Now, back to the program.
Well, welcome back. We're in our last segment for today's show, and we're talking with the author Michael Rosen, who has written a terrific book. It's called What Else But Home, Seven Boys and an American Journey Between the Projects and the Penthouse. And it's a book about a family that has come together, and they're not sharing, for the most part, blood. And they have chosen, they made the choice to be a family. And we're titling today's show as Family by Any Other Name. And Michael has been sharing with us what the challenges and successes have been in embracing these seven boys, along with his wonderful and supportive wife, Leslie. But we also have on the line with us Dr. Craig Paizo, as our listeners know, who normally joins us at the end of each show, just to offer any reflections and thoughts that he may have from the work that he does as a psychologist and has done so for the last 30 years. So, Craig, as we continue our conversation with Michael, what are any thoughts that you have as you've had a chance to listen to his commentary?
Well, yes, thank you. I thought that the most profound thing I heard was the gift that he and his wife apparently have given to these young men, and that is the gift of the ability to find one's center. You described in the last segment how one young man recently during the holidays had described how he'd become sad, and at the same time had been reading the works of Thich Nhat Hanh. And those readings and the meditations and the suggestions that Thich Nhat Hanh offers, along with the kind of loving and structured balanced parenting that they have apparently given to these young men, helps people find their center. And at that center, you find a mix of, on the one hand, the opportunity to heal and find peace, but also you confront your demons, so to speak. And until you do the work at your center, you can't ultimately be happy or at peace. So it's not surprising that this young man is struggling now with sadness, because you've given him the gift of finding his center, being strong enough and ready to become more centered.
Yeah, I'm writing notes on my hand as you're talking, because I'm thinking, oh, of course it's the holidays. I should have thought of that. And thank you, because you've given me the chills. I have to call Juan after this and talk with him. Thank you.
That's wonderful.
You're very welcome.
And one of the other things that I'd like to hear both of your thinking about is, I was reading the news this morning, and Senator Harry Reid's in trouble because of some private comments that he shared about Barack Obama that is now public and in the public domain. But I think, Michael, if I think about the road that your wife and you have gone down of blending people together and recognizing the diversity, but the love is almost transcended that, and you don't want to say you're colorblind, but you're not distracted from the mission that you and your wife have adopted because of the color of the skin of your children. Because if I got the picture correctly, they run the gamut from dark to light, from Caucasian to Hispanic, and I thought one of them looked African American.
Yes, we have African American, so Dominican, Puerto Rican, white.
So when you think about society and that, you know, I think what Senator Reid was attempting to say is that there is some manipulation that you sometimes have to do in order to be successful, and that I don't agree with his statement or disagree with what he did, but I think you've had to probably share with your sons that as we try to navigate this life, that we're going to have this challenge as well, that there's going to be a sensitivity to how much we are or how little we are. But what advice have you given to your sons as to how they navigate the world based on who their brothers are and who their surrogate parents are? What have you done in that area?
Well, that the world is not going to forget what color their skin is. And the world is going to listen to the nuance of their voice. And these are guys who have learned to speak in different languages of English. I listen to them when they're just by themselves, and then I listen to them when they're talking to us or when they're on the phone with my wife's parents. And, you know, they can go between different vernaculars of English. And they've really started to understand the depth of navigating the world and mentorship. You know, Kindu is asked to come to business meetings with me just to see what people do, because they didn't have moms or dads that lived in that call it a middle class world, or as they call it, a white world. And of course, it's not just a white world, but it's a white behaving world.
Sure. Well, Michael, it has really been a pleasure having you on the show today, and I just want to make sure that listeners understand that, you know, they can get your book, What Else But Home, Seven Boys in an American Journey Between the Projects and the Penthouse, at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or their corner bookstore. And if they want to read more about your works, because you have another book that you wrote as well, called Spinning Words, Turning Worlds, that they can go to www.michaelrosen, that's R-O-S-E-N, one word, michaelrosenwords.com, and they can also email Michael at rosen@michaelrosenwords.com as well.
Yes.
So, Michael, it's been a pleasure having you, and Craig, thank you so much for joining us today as well. I think this conversation truly has been very enlightening, to say the least.
Yeah, and thank you both. Thank you really for the gentleness and the gentlemanliness of your interview. It's really been wonderful.
Wonderful. Well, again, thanks so much, Craig, for calling in and spending
You're
some
welcome.
Time with us as well.
You're very welcome.
Thank you. Okay, so we're going to be back again next Monday to spend some more time giving you information that will help you navigate your life, hopefully somewhat easier by the stuff and the guests that we have to share with you. So wishing you a very, very good week. This is your host, Nat Williams. Until then, take care.
Thank you again for listening to the Navigating Your Life Show. Please join Dr. Nathaniel J. Williams again next Monday at 7 a.m. Pacific Time, 10 a.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. Have a great week, and here's hoping your life will change for the better forever.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.